For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money on new windows now at Menards. Update your home with vinyl windows from Jeld-Wen. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on Jeld-Wen windows in store or view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more window deals happening this week now at Menards.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello, survivalists. This is the Crux True Survival Podcast. I'm your host, Casey McIntosh, joined by my lovely co-host, Julie Henningsen.
Hi, Casey.
Hello, Julie.
Good to be here.
Hi, it's so good to see your face, even though it's pixelated over there.
Yeah.
Today, we're exploring a tragedy that shook Australia to its core, the 1997 Thredbo landslide. This catastrophic event not only reshaped a picturesque village in North South Wales, but also left a profound mark on the nation's psyche. We'll discuss what led up to the landslide, the heroic survival of Stuart Diver, and the aftermath that changed policies and lives forever. Let's dive in.
Sounds like a good one. Any opportunity to go to Australia, I'm on board.
Right. And actually, this suggestion for this story came from the one and only Melanie Stubbs, who we just recently interviewed about the kangaroo attack. She was the one that gave me the heads up.
Yeah. Okay,
so
good.
So somebody to visit when we go over there too.
Of course.
Hi, even Melanie. Better. First of all, since we're talking about landslides, I wanted to give our non-geologists like myself a moment to learn about what sets the stage for natural disasters like this. So landslides are not just the stuff of disaster movies. They're real, powerful, and unpredictable natural events. And at its core, landslide is the movement of rock, earth, and debris down a slope, which makes sense. And they can be triggered by a variety of factors. So heavy rainfall can saturate the ground, and that reduces the stability of the slope. Sometimes earthquakes shake loose rocks and soil. The other thing is human activities like construction and deforestation can weaken the land, making it more susceptible to sliding. One of the most infamous landslides of history occurred in 1980 when the Mount St. Helens in Washington State erupted, and the eruption triggered a massive landslide that was the largest in recorded history. Did you know that, Julie? I mean, that it was the most massive landslide in recorded history.
I didn't know that, but I do know a lot about the eruption because I was there. This states me, but I grew up in Western Washington, and I remember I was just a little kid, but I remember vividly May 18, 1980.
We got to do a story on that at some point. But I mean, imagine an entire mountain collapsing and rushing down at breakneck speed. Horrifying. That's all I can say about that.
Yeah, that is horrifying. And I have seen pictures too. It's like brown soup just pouring down the hillside.
Despite all the doom and gloom about landslides, they can also create some really stunning landscapes. The Vaiont Dam disaster in Italy, for example, it was 1963, and this landslide caused a massive wave to overlap the dam. But the resulting landscape is kind of a hauntingly beautiful reminder of the power of nature. So anyway, we should cover that one at some point, too.
That's an aspect of landslides that I never considered.
Right.
That makes sense.
Because the dam in and of itself probably destabilized the landscape. Just guessing.
Right. Exactly. That's quite possible.
There's probably like a bunch of geologists out there rolling their eyes at me right now. Sorry.
Well, in Montana, I don't know about up there where you are, but where I am near Yellowstone National Park, it's like the seismic activity. And there's a lot of just instability being near the, you know, I don't know, the world's largest volcano caldera. That's Yellowstone
National Park. All those tectonic plates and all that stuff.
Yeah, all that shifting and moving. Got to be on the lookout for right. the rogue landslide.
Or the rogue volcano, you know. Do you ever think about that? Like being so close to,
right.
you know, this.
Oh, yeah. I think about it a lot. And that, and then I stop because it's like one of those things. Well, if it happens,
nothing
you can do. Don't worry about things you can't control.
Right. And these things are so unbelievable and so hard to wrap your mind around as a human. It just doesn't even seem possible. Because it's so,
yeah.
I don't know. You want to hear a fun fact completely not relevant to landslides on Earth?
Yes.
So apparently landslides are not exclusive to Earth. And Mars has some of the largest landslides in the solar system.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's amazing that we know that.
I know. There's this canyon on Mars. It's over 4,000 kilometers long. And it has landslides that overshadow anything that we've had on our planet. And because it's lower gravity compared to Earth, it affects how materials on the surface behave. And the lower gravity means that slopes can be steeper before they become more unstable. And then when they do fail, the resulting landslides can be massive. But there's also large volcanoes on Mars, which can destabilize nearby terrain, like you were saying before.
Wow.
I know. Isn't that weird?
That is weird. That's crazy.
I know.
A landslide on Mars.
Yeah.
That's going to show up in my dreams.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking... You think I was thinking about how the fact that we call it movement of Earth, right? But when you're on Mars, you don't have Earth movement. You have Mars movement.
Right. Movement of Mars. Somebody recently said, why do we call it Earth? It's 70% water. We should call it ocean. And I was like, that's a good point.
That is hilarious. That is a good point.
Yeah.
It's because we live on the Earth. And since humans are so egocentric, we can't remember the fact that there is a whole nother world. Living underneath the surface of the water.
Exactly.
That's my guess. So back to Earth, Julie. I hope I haven't lost too many listeners in this introduction. So sorry. So Thredbo is a beloved alpine village, and it's famous for its ski resort, which is nestled in the snowy mountains. However, on the night of July 30th, 1997, this idyllic setting turned into a scene of devastation. And today we're going to explore the details and consequences of that fateful night. Thredbo is known for its winter sports and picturesque landscapes. It's located in New South Wales, Australia. The village is usually bustling with tourists and locals, home to several lodges, including the Karinya and Bimbadeen lodges. These lodges were situated on a steep slope and would become the focal point of the disaster. So I kind of picture this town as being like, maybe like Bozeman or Whitefish, right?
Yeah, it's funny. I never really thought of Australia as like a winter ski or a winter sports place. I'm sure, I mean, it's a big country. It's as big as the U.S., so it's probably got a little of everything, but that's interesting.
I know. It's just like I used to think of Arizona as just being a dust bowl, but there's actually more to it than that, right? It's funny.
Yeah.
You hear a couple stories and then that's what sticks in your head. Like you always think about that, the outback and... You know, dry, desolate.
And the coast.
Right.
Yeah. And the ocean and sunny weather and in the skin cancer capital of the world. That's, you know, one of the hole in the ozone not far away.
Right. And also now we're thinking about being attacked by kangaroos and kangaroos drowning your dogs and things like that after we talked to Melanie.
I will rarely think of Australia without thinking about that.
Oh, my gosh. I saw this video recently of this male kangaroo, and apparently they get their female mates by showing their bicep muscles. I'm going to send you a link to it.
Oh.
It's crazy. It made me think about Melanie's story in a whole nother light. She's so lucky that it was a mama kangaroo. Anyway,
yeah.
I digress.
Not so far off from humans, I guess, in that regard.
Yeah, you mean like the men showing off their muscles? That's what you're getting
at? Yeah, the gun show.
Yeah, the gun show.
Inviting you to the gun show.
Suns out, guns out. That's what one of my gym instructors always says.
Nice.
Yeah.
As he wears his muscle shirt.
Oh, yeah. Every time. The geological setting of Thredbo was both its blessing and its curse. The steep slopes that, you know, provide excellent skiing also pose these significant risks. Heavy snowfall and occasional thaws added pressure to the land. And despite these risks, the lodges were built on this precarious terrain. A good way of probably thinking about this is, have you seen frost heaves in roads before? The only reason I even know of that is because I have a husband who's a civil engineer. But, you know, the freeze and thaw can kind of make, I'm sure that that is destabilizing.
Yeah.
So in the days leading up to this landslide, the region experienced substantial rainfall. This, coupled with snowmelt, led to water seeping into the soil, increasing the instability of the slope. Unbeknownst to the residents and authorities, a disaster was brewing beneath the surface. On July 30th, 1997, at around 11:35 p.m., the peaceful night in Thredbo was shattered. A massive landslide tore down the slope. It obliterated the Karenya and Bembedin lodges. In an instant, 3,500 tons of debris buried these structures along with their occupants. And I'm assuming that most of these people were in bed at the time.
Oh, yeah. Middle of the night in two ski lodges. What time of year did you say it was?
So it's July 30th.
Okay. So maybe there's not a lot of like, well, no, because it's Australia. So it's the middle of the
right
winter.
Well, yeah. So I don't know. I mean, I guess I'll get to numbers later and we can discuss that a little bit further. But in any case, most people were probably in bed. If you were lucky, you went into town to the bar and you didn't go home until the bar closed. Hopefully they close at 2 a.m.
Yes.
If you're lucky.
Right.
So witnesses describe the noise as a thunderous roar followed by an eerie silence. Emergency services were quickly on the scene, but the scale of the devastation was overwhelming. The landslide had created a chaotic mess of rubble, which made the rescue operation extremely challenging. So within 10 to 20 minutes of this incident, emergency calls reaching the New South Wales Fire Brigade's communication center were made. And the local fire brigades responded initially, believing that there were about 100 people trapped. Police arrived at 12:30 a.m. and declared a regional disaster, and they coordinated efforts from Goulburn and notifying Sydney. Medical staff and rescue workers from nearby areas, including Cooma, Canberra, and Jindabyne, were dispatched to the site. So on the first day, so really that's only a few hours after the slide, which occurred at 11:35, by 2 a.m., around 100 professional services and many volunteers from various organizations, including Volunteer Rescue Association and State Emergency Service and Australian Red Cross, were on site. That's pretty quick response time, truly.
Yeah, especially in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Can you imagine getting that call?
Yeah.
A forward medical command post was established by 7:30 in the morning. They didn't find the first body until 4:20 p.m.
Oh, wow.
And they didn't pull it out till 8:50 p.m. You have to keep in mind that the rescue workers faced difficult conditions because the slope was unstable. There were underground streams, sub-zero temperatures, sub-zero, I guess, in Celsius. It was about 7 degrees Fahrenheit. There was only this one body discovered in 24 hours. Inspector Rory O'Driscoll of the NSW Police arrived at the scene at 8:15 a.m., and by 10 a.m., geophysicists who had been brought in from Sydney assessed the area to deem it safe enough to start excavating the layers. But again, the site was highly unstable. The underground stream was flowing through the debris at a rate of 6,120 liters per hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that was just like freezing cold water.
Yeah. Can you imagine being out there trying to look through all of that rubble?
No. I mean, you wouldn't know where to start. I mean, when we think about concepts of wilderness medicine, the first thing, or any type of first response, first thing is always scene safety. You can't get in and do anything until you know it's safe, and you're not going to make a bad situation worse by getting hurt or injured yourself. And I just can't imagine how daunting the task of trying to decide that it was safe to enter that scene and to start.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looking for people.
I think in this situation, safe is such a relative term because there's really no safe on a landslide. It's almost probably like going to find someone in an avalanche because there's just no guarantee that it's not going to move more, you know? So you're really risking your life. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, in this instance, none of the rescuers were severely injured that I found.
Good.
At 10:30 in the morning, a medical team evaluated the disaster site, and they were finding that many of the rescue workers were suffering from some minor injuries. So the team recognized that they needed to be prepared to treat exhaustion and hypothermia among the rescuers. There were 1,350 rescue workers and 250 on site at any given time. So to prevent fatigue, they were working in two-hour shifts and having four-hour breaks. Along the time that they were looking for buried bodies, they were also trying to reinforce the area to prevent further sliding. And I didn't find anything about how they were going about reinforcing anything, but they were working on trying to stabilize the ground to the best of their ability. The other thing too is as you move things around to find people, therein lies another way of disturbing
potential hazard, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
More bodies were discovered after that first 24 hours, but not all could be retrieved immediately, again, due to the instability of the rocks. Environmental issues, including water and sewage cutoffs and diesel fuel leakage into the Threadrow Creek, were identified. And rescue efforts continued despite the announcement that the chances of finding survivors were slim. Assistant Police Commissioner Ken Maroney said, quote, "I think at this stage, the chances are quite remote in regard to finding anyone alive."
I feel like statements like that are usually a precursor to finding people alive. Like maybe there's some magic in making that declaration that there will be survivors because, you know, usually that's the context that we hear that in.
Yeah, really what it means is that we all need to use Murphy's Law a little bit more because apparently it's
exactly
more useful than we typically think. Thermal imaging was also used to find victims, and at this point, they were not able to detect anything with thermal imaging, which is a somber finding. Again, think about the temperatures, too. It's not only that this natural disaster happened, but anyone who's buried is also buried in really cold temperatures.
Right. Yeah. They're not going to feel very warm or probably kick off much heat on thermal imaging, although if they're alive, there'll be something.
Right. Doctors were meeting with relatives of the missing on that first day in the afternoon. So I'm not really sure what they were telling people. I can imagine it would be just a free for all, you know, family members who are probably desperate to get information. And there's just really no information at this point. Among those that were trapped was Stuart Diver, who was a ski instructor who was staying in the Karenia Lodge. And Stuart found himself buried alive, pinned in a tiny air pocket under layers of concrete and debris. His remarkable story of survival is one of courage and definitely one of patience. It was 5:37 a.m. on the 2nd of August, which is the third day since the landslide, and the diggers had finished digging and they had placed some sound equipment in the hole that they had been excavating. And apparently this is standard procedure. They're trying to hear any sounds that potentially could be buried beneath the layers. And they heard some sound under a concrete slab. A rescue firefighter, Steve Hurst, used some monitoring equipment to confirm what they initially had heard and shouted, "Rescue teams working overhead. Can anyone hear me?" To which a voice called back, "I can hear you." They asked if he had any injuries, and to this he replied, "No, but my feet are bloody cold."
Oh, well, I'm glad they're not bloody. At least they're just bloody cold.
Right.
That's pretty amazing.
I know. I mean, I can't imagine their shock at hearing his voice. After all of this time, all of this digging, having not found anyone alive, especially at the number
of needle in a haystack. Yeah.
And at this number
had to feel good.
Of hours that have elapsed, their hope is probably just diminishing by the minute.
Mm-hmm.
They identified him as Stuart Diver, a 27-year-old ski instructor. A device known as a trap person locator was deployed. And this is equipment with a microphone and a speaker, which they could use to maintain communication with Diver. Additionally, a pipe was inserted to supply warmer air to alleviate his low body temperature. They were kind of heating him up in there.
That's nice.
And another tube provided fluids for hydration. He could take two sips every 20 minutes, which reminded me very much of baby Jessica. Because, well, they didn't give her any fluid, but I remember they were concerned about.
Yeah, they were really cautious. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems stingy, two sips every 20 minutes, but also... makes sense.
I kind of was wondering, how are they monitoring his sipping? And how much is a sip, really? I mean, my sip might be different than yours. Just saying.
Pretty subjective. Pretty subjective.
It might be like a glug. That might be my sip of our sip.
Where is the line between a sip and a glug?
We should measure this sometime just for fun. Yeah. Actually, it would be a really good thing to do with your kids in the summer when they're telling you they're bored. They can define it for us.
Right. We need a metric here to really narrow this down.
Right.
An objective amount.
Exactly. In a statement to the press, Hearst conveyed Diver's condition as uninjured but severely cold. Police Superintendent Charlie Sanders highlighted the challenge of extracting Diver due to the risk of concrete slabs collapsing on him when they're trying to move things around to get him out.
Gosh, how tragic would that be?
Oh
gosh, I can't even imagine.
Yeah, I can't even imagine either. The amount of pressure that you would have as a rescuer in this situation. Same with baby Jessica. It's very similar. And actually, they rescued him in a very similar way, which I'll get to that in a second.
Oh, cool.
Diver was situated 2 meters below the surface beneath 3 concrete slabs, submerged in water with only underpants on. Just a glorious way to be found, just in your underpants.
Right.
Here I am.
Well, I guess at least he wasn't sleeping in the nude. At least he had the undies on.
Oh, so we've learned another lesson, Julie. Number one, never leave the house without underwear on. Number two, don't sleep in the nude. Words to live by.
Words to live by.
To mitigate the danger of the concrete causing harm, rescuers commenced digging a 16-meter tunnel from the eastern slope. After 5 hours of effort, they reached Diver with paramedic Paul Featherstone, maintaining communication with him for 11 hours until his liberation. This man.
Oh my gosh.
He might be the hero in this story. The fact that he stayed there for 11 hours communicating with Diver the whole time, making sure that he was doing okay. Amazing.
Yeah. Although, imagine being that person, like, you know, 8-9 hours in, you probably wouldn't be like, I'm getting kind of tired. I'm going to call it a day. Let me introduce you to my my backup, you know, rescuer here. And then like going to rest. I don't know. I've never been in that situation. And I'm sure exhaustion might dictate otherwise. But he probably was on the edge of his seat to see this through.
Yeah. And my guess is that they had someone giving him sips of water throughout this whole thing. Oh, only two sips.
Or maybe even glugs. He might have been able to take the glugs.
I hope so. I hope somebody's getting, you know, properly hydrated out there. Oh, my goodness. Despite the need for periodic evacuations due to shifting rubble, Featherstone remained underground to keep Diver engaged and calm. Stuart Diver's ordeal is nothing short of miraculous. Trapped under rubble, he faced a terrifying reality. In the initial moments, Stuart remained calm. He was conserving his energy and air. Despite the immense pressure and darkness, he focused on survival. Diver was eventually rescued around 5:10 p.m. with frostbitten feet, and he was transported to Canberra Hospital for treatment. His initial reaction upon breathing the fresh mountain air was an exclamation about the beauty of the sky. He had been trapped for 65 hours. And get this, this is the most chilling part of his story, I think, is that he had been trapped alongside his deceased wife, Sally, who was a reservations manager at the resort. She had drowned beneath a concrete beam that trapped her in a water-filled depression.
Oh, that's horrible.
I know. I can't imagine being trapped next to your deceased partner and having to be there for 65 hours.
Yeah. Oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
It's amazing he was able to kind of just hang out and stay calm. Hopefully he could hear, you know, distant noises, knowing that there was a rescue effort underway.
Yeah, I would hope that that would make him feel like there was some reason to hang on.
Right. Because if 65 hours, if he didn't feel like, you know, rescue was a possibility soon, that would just be devastating.
Right. It would be really easy.
Devastating either way.
It'd be easy to give up at that point and just succumb to hypothermia, you know. And if she was sitting in a water-filled area, what are the chances that he's dry?
Right. Yeah.
The other thing I was thinking about is if you'd been trapped in a situation like this, how hard it would be to be in a confined space ever again after that. Be like, I'm sleeping outside. Yes. From now on, sleeping outside.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Or to even just sleep soundly, kind of be able to let go of that fear enough to just fall asleep really in any environment, I can imagine being probably pretty challenging.
Yeah. I mean, falling asleep for any of us can be hard, even if you've never experienced something sure. like this. I mean,
true statement.
Any small anxiety you have, well, lie down and see if it goes away. Probably not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Following divers' rescue, the search continued in hopes of finding more survivors. I'm sure that they were spurred on by the discovery of Diver, you know, just thinking like, maybe this is possible, we can find someone else. But unfortunately, no more victims were found. And the last victim was recovered on Thursday, August 7th. Notably, according to a diary kept by AFP officers during the rescue operation, adverse weather conditions only commenced after the recovery of the final bodies. Stewart's survival was hailed as a miracle, obviously. His rescue not only uplifted the nation, but also highlighted the extraordinary efforts of the emergency services. However, for many others, the outcome was not as fortunate. The aftermath of the Thredbo landslide was a period of mourning, investigation, and some significant change. The disaster claimed 18 lives, leaving a community and a nation grieving. Memorial services were held, and a profound sense of loss permeated the whole entire area.
I have to say, that's super tragic, but I was picturing a lot more than 18 people. So, I mean, in that sense, at least it wasn't 180 people.
Right. And probably you would think when both of these lodges were packed to the brim, they held a lot more than 18 people.
Right. Yeah, I think that's why I was picturing like a hotel lodge mm-hmm. with all kinds of different rooms and spaces. Maybe it was a smaller scale operation.
Maybe so. In the wake of the tragedy, a comprehensive investigation was launched to determine the cause of the landslide. In 1998, three terraces reinforced with gabions, which I don't know, what's a gabion? Let's find out.
A cage or cylinder or box filled with rocks, concrete, and sometimes sand or soil for use in civil engineering.
Look at you. Did you just pull that right out of your brain? Because if you did,
oh yeah,
Julie.
I just know that. Wikipedia.
I know. I just had to tease you a little bit. Actually, the neighborhood above me has one of those above the roadway. So now I know what it's called. I'm going to pull that out one time.
You're going to need to start referring to it as the gabion every time you drive by it to your kids.
Yeah, mainly my husband is the one I need to do that to because...
Yes, that will impress him.
Yeah, exactly. Because he's the person that's knowledgeable about everything except for medicine, which is funny. But if I pull out a word like that, he might be impressed.
Yeah, just casually comment on the structure of the gabion.
I will. But in any case, there were these gabions that were erected at the site, and the Alpine Way underwent reconstruction with underslope retaining walls. So Alpine Way was the roadway, I believe, up to the lodges. Currently, the area, along with the section of Alpine Way, is equipped with 25 inclinometers to detect any slope movement and 12 piezometers to monitor water flow in the soil. So they went very much.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The other direction in terms of making sure that it's stable.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I would be curious about how that affected the ski business there, if people forgot about it or if they were worried about going and staying the night there, you know?
I don't know. They probably thought, well, you know, because like landslides are a lot like avalanches. The safest time to be on that terrain is just after it happened, because, you know, it's maybe not minutes after it happened, but days after things have stabilized, you know, nothing's gliding again anytime soon.
Yeah. I mean, the chances of that have got to be astronomically slim. But anyway, right. I wonder if there are any, like, I don't know, hydrologists or geologists or anybody that goes to visit the site that monitors that stuff just, you know, before they stay there as a safety
right
precaution.
Quick website check. Yeah.
Like the webcam is
like
on
you
it.
Do with the, yes, like the webcam. Like if we're driving across mountain passes, take a peek at the webcam. See what you're in for.
We're not going to stay there unless we check the webcam first.
Yeah.
Well, according to the coroner's report released on June 29th, 2000, the landslide was triggered by heavy rain, melting snow, and a leaking water main.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking, well, who's legally responsible for that water main?
Exactly.
You wouldn't want to be the one responsible for that.
No.
The report highlighted previous landslides before July 1997, suggesting they should have prompted action from relevant authorities before this happened. One recommendation was the establishment of an independent body to assess National Parks and Wildlife Service road maintenance within its parks, which was later accepted by NSW Environment Minister Bob Debus. By December 2004, the state government of New South Wales had paid out $40 million in out-of-court settlements to 91 affected businesses and individuals.
Oh, it's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. On December 2, 2004, a Supreme Court ruling attributed the disaster to the leaking water main and the Alpine Way, which was constructed on debris-filled road. Soil creep is what caused the main to fracture. And it saturated the unstable slope, which supported the road above Carinya. And the verdict allowed the civil case to proceed. On June 5, 2004, the Brinda Bella Ski Club inaugurated its new lodge. Initially built as a temporary access road by the Snowy Mountain Hydroelectric Authority in the 1950s, the Alpine Way was later upgraded and transferred to what's now known as Kosciuszko National Park. Insufficient funds had hindered its maintenance, prompting responsibility for the Alpine Way and Kosciuszko Road to be transferred to the Roads and Traffic Authority following the disaster. So I think that that kind of all led up to the fact that the water main broke because the road was improperly managed.
I was going to say, most disasters, you can trace it back to like two or three critical errors, or at least kind of human-made disasters, not so much your run-of-the-mill landslide, but yeah.
Right.
Usually some background story.
When humans are involved in destabilizing the land.
Yeah, exactly.
All falls on the shoulders of one man. I don't know who that one man is, but he's probably long gone. Memorial services were held in 2007 and 2017 to mark the 10th and 20th anniversary of the event, respectively, featuring a flare rundown of the mountain after sunset, which I'm guessing is like the, we have Schlitt parades on the ski hill every year for Christmas or, you know, New Year's. And that's what I'm assuming they're talking about. In 2002, a fact-based made-for-TV drama titled Heroes Mountain was released, starring Craig McLaughlin and Stuart Diver, with Tom Long and Anthony Hayes in supporting roles.
Oh, well, I know what I'm doing tonight.
Ah, you're going to have a date with Stuart Diver. Heroes Mountain. I bet you can find it on YouTube.
Okay. Yeah, Heroes Mountain.
The findings in all of these studies had prompted reevaluation for building practices and emergency response protocols in similar terrains. The importance of maintaining infrastructure, especially in vulnerable areas, was underscored. Authorities took steps to prevent such a disaster from happening again, implementing stricter regulations and more rigorous inspections, thankfully. Stuart Diver, despite his harrowing experience, became a symbol of resilience, and he continued to live in Thredbo and became an advocate for safety and emergency preparedness. His journey of recovery and his efforts to help others added a positive dimension to an otherwise tragic event. Thredbo itself underwent reconstruction both physically and emotionally. The community banded together to rebuild. They honored those that were lost while striving to create a safer environment at the same time. The landslide's impact led to the establishment of better disaster management strategies, ensuring that the lessons learned would be of benefit to future generations, which it's unfortunate that horrible things have to happen before we get our acts together in all areas of life, right?
Right. Yeah. There's like so many themes with these survival stories that we've shared, including the one about it's very unlikely to find any further survivors. It's usually the precursor to somebody being found. And then the other one, the other theme is just all of the improvement that, you know, the retrospect, the hindsight improvements that get made in regulations and policies after something like this.
Right, which is a good reminder to all of us. The 1997 Thredbo landslide left an indelible mark on Australia. It served as a stark reminder of the power of nature and the importance of preparedness, as we mentioned. The event led to significant improvements in building codes, infrastructure maintenance, and emergency response systems. Stuart Diver's story continues to inspire. His resilience in the face of overwhelming odds is a testament to the human spirit. His advocacy for safety and preparedness has undoubtedly contributed to greater awareness. Landslides remind us of the sheer power and unpredictability of nature. They can reshape landscapes, create new ecosystems, and even offer insights into our planet's geology. So next time you're out in nature, take a moment to appreciate the ground beneath your feet and the fact that it isn't moving. Ultimately, it's good to know that landslides exist. They might be able to happen in your area, you know, unless you live in Florida, which is apparently the flattest state in America. But then again, if you live in Florida, you have sinkholes. So, you know.
So the earth beneath your feet still could be moving at any time.
Right. It could be. Anyway, explore resources of natural disasters where you are and just be informed about safety practices in your own community. Just remember this, as Julie says, piss poor planning leads to piss poor performance. Oh, wait a minute. No, that's not it.
Piss poor planning does not lead to anything but piss poor performance.
Yeah, so we could say it either way. You could say piss poor planning leads to piss poor performance or prior proper planning.
Just remember, just remember the seven P's and yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Do some prior proper planning.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you for joining us on this journey through the 1997 Thredbo landslide. This tragic event, while devastating, brought out the best in humanity, courage, and community support and drive to improve. We hope you found today's episode both informing and inspiring. If you have thoughts or questions, please reach out to us on our Instagram at The Crux Podcast or through email, which is thecruxsurvival@gmail.com. We truly appreciate all comments of support, suggestions, anything. We are just so happy when anyone has anything to say about what we're doing because it makes us want to keep doing it. Right, Julie?
Yeah. What about the comment we got recently? It was a good one. Somebody is out there milking cows and listening to our
milking
podcast.
Goat.
Milking goats. Milking goats.
Yes.
Like lots of goats.
Milking lots of goats. Listening to our survival stories. So
we appreciate you.
Super awesome. Thank you to my brother, Coley, who's posting our The Crux podcasts all over the world. He just posted one at a train station in Geneva. So thanks, Coley.
He's posting stickers,
Stickers,
right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Marketing material worldwide.
Exactly. Did you ever watch the French movie Amelie?
I did watch that. I've forgotten about it, so I couldn't even tell you anything about it, but I remember it now that you say it.
Well, what it reminds me of, there's a garden gnome that's in her father's garden, and one day he notices that it's missing. And the father always wanted to go world traveling, but he couldn't for some reason. And so he starts opening up letters. There's no return address. And there's pictures of his garden gnome all over the world, places like the Great Wall of China.
I do remember that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's what's happening for us.
So You never know when you're going to come across the Crux podcast sticker.
Yeah.
Great Wall of China.
Exactly. But if you find one, if you're somewhere out there in the world and you find a sticker for our podcast.
Take a picture.
Yes. Send it to us. We'd so much appreciate it. Yes. So anyway.
Or if you're a world traveler like Coley, let us know and we'll send you some stickers.
Yes.
To take with you.
100%.
Join the cause. Join the cause.
Exactly. Get the word out. All right. Well, we so appreciate you. Stay tuned for our next episode. where we'll be exploring another compelling survival story. I hope you guys have a wonderful week. Bye, Julie.
Bye, Casey.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.